If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 355. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, you ready to break down some first base prospects today?
Oh, yeah. This is going to be a good one as we continue to roll through. Obviously, the catching position was pretty deep for the prospect side, and even the MLB side, as we did that the last two episodes. And first base is, I don't know, not as exciting. While there are some fun names at the top, though, to discuss, yeah, I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, very, very top heavy, kind of thins out, but as we were talking about, a lot of guys move the first base from third or a corner outfield down the road. So position always ends up okay, but you know, when we look at just prospects, sometimes it looks a little top heavy, as it does this year as well. Before we get into our rankings and all the players we're going to be discussing, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter and Blue Sky. Chris is at Chris Clegg MILB on Twitter and at Chris Clegg on Blue Sky. And I am at Eric Cross MLB on both. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, DynastyDugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. All of our Dynasty Prospect FYPD rankings are on there, plus a lot more. And make sure to check out all the great content on RotoBaller. Use the code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get your 10% off any premium package. Baseball, basketball, football, whatever you want. RotoBaller's got it. And use that code TOOLSHED. Again, 10% off at checkout over on rotoballer.com. All right, we'll start off with our personal top 10s. We're going 25 deep again on this one, which we'll probably do through second base and third base. Probably go a bit deeper on shortstop and outfield and pitching, obviously, but our top 25 overall for this episode, starting out with our personal top 10s. Chris, who you got?
All righty. So right at the top, I have Samuel Basayo. He's a catcher and a first baseman. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how he shakes out and where it goes. But Bryce Eldridge at 2, Nick Kurtz at 3, Jack Caglione at 4, Xavier Isaac at 5, Augustin Ramirez at 6, Josue Briseño at 7, Ralphie Velasquez, 8, Ryan Clifford, 9, and Luke Adams coming in at 10.
Yeah, so I think like a half of that top 10 right there were former catchers or just other positions in general. Just shows you what you're saying in the intro. A lot of guys moved to this position later on in their development or even in the majors. I also have Samuel Basayo at 1, Bryce Eldridge at 2, Nick Kurtz at 3, so unified 1-2-3 there. I have Xavier Isaac and Jack Caglione flip-flopped, so Isaac 4, Cags at 5, Augustin Ramirez 6, Josue Briseño 7, Tyler Locklear 8, Davison De Los Santos 9, and Tyler Black at number 10 here. So let's start out. We obviously talked about Basayo last episode, so we won't get into him again. So I guess our top true first base prospect is Mr. Bryce Eldridge, who had a really breakout year this year overall, had some time out in the AFL as well, but unfortunately left before Chris and I got out there. That was kind of a bummer, but again, big breakout year for him across not one, not two, not three, but four levels. Most was in low A and high A, but in 116 games overall, slash 292, 374, 516, 27 doubles, 23 home runs, added six steals as well, and nine games in double A, eight in triple A to end the season, all at just 19 years old. And he's now 20, turned 20 back in mid-October, still very young for what he accomplished this year, and it was very, very impressive. So, Chris, what do you think we're looking at here for the upside for Bryce Eldridge? Obviously, he's a large human being. I mean, not necessarily in terms of width, but height, 6'7", listed at about 225 pounds, but very strong guy. You know, what do you think, you know, ultimately we're looking at here for upside with Bryce Eldridge?
Yeah, I mean, he had one of the best years in minor league baseball, in my opinion, just given how young he was, considering 19 years old, the fact that he moved as quick as he did, and he handled all the jumps pretty well. The contact rate's improved all season. You know, the first month of the year, it was a 60% contact rate and a 29% strikeout rate. So you look at that, and we were like, okay, like, who is this Bryce Eldridge guy? We had seen the upside in 2023 after he was drafted at the complex and then single A, and then he comes back out and he struggles out of the gate. But then in May, the contact rate jumped to 70.5%. Strikeout rate fell about a percentage point and a half. Then in June, it was like, okay, the contact rate jumped again to 74%, 22% strikeout rate. Awesome. July, there was some struggles again. 62% contact, 33% strikeout. But then he finished strong in August and September with 73% and 71% contact rates. Those 71 to 73% range are average, slightly better than average for league standards and especially for his age. And the strikeout rates drastically improved. 20% in August, 24% in September. So those were awesome to see. I mean, the power is already off the charts. 90th percentile exit velocity of 107 miles an hour. I was thinking 19 in my head, 19 years old, 107 mile an hour, 9th percentile. Those are both stellar marks. I mean, the contact plus that'll play. He gets the ball in the air often, 60% air rate this year, so really solid number there. He gets to the poolside power with ease, and the swing's relatively smooth and simple. Like, he's not selling out for power. He lets the power come to him, and it comes really naturally. He uses a simple toe tap in all counts, which does help with his timing, helped improve the contact down the stretch. I like Eldridge a lot. I think it's a future 30 home run bat pretty consistently. He's going to put a lot of balls in McCovey's Cove out there in the water and going to be really fun to watch for a long time.
Yeah, he's probably the best power hitter the Giants have developed in several years. You know, I think that's pretty easy to say. Yeah, that power is absolutely massive. It's so impressive. Kind of wish we had a chance to see him, but I didn't get to see him in Double A. He was only there for nine games and not when they were up anywhere near here, so did not get a chance to see Eldridge this past season, unfortunately, but yeah, this is a 30-plus home run bat, and what really is kind of an underrated, impressive thing that happened with him this year as well. As Chris mentioned, the contact rates were trending up, but the approach got better too. Like, you look at his strikeout-to-walk ratio in low A compared to high A, he improved the walk rate, nearly doubled the walk rate, improved the strikeout rate exponentially as well. So overall, you know, K rate was doing 25%, but kind of went down when he got in the higher levels, which is really impressive to see as well, without sacrificing contact or power. Just, you know, slowly made those improvements as a hitter to get better while still hitting for a ton of power. So, yeah, maybe he's, you know, I don't think he's going to be 280 or anything like that, but, you know, 260, 30 home runs, you know, good middle-of-the-order bats. I think that's what we're looking at here with Bryce Eldridge. Again, a guy that was drafted out of high school in the 2023 draft, that's already kind of, you know, sniffing the major leagues. I don't think he'll be up early this year. I mean, I don't think they're going to push him too hard. Maybe you see him later on in 2025, but yeah, definitely, you know, one of the, you know, best power hitting prospects in the game, you know, a top 25 fantasy prospect for sure. I don't think there's much question about that. You know, right behind him, we got a few FYPD guys with Nick Kirk and Jack Caglione. I mean, Nick Kirk was very, very impressive out in the AFL. I mean, he was a later addition. I think he was added right around the same time that Eldridge was taken off the roster. So that was a nice little added bonus there. We get to see Kurtz a few times. I think maybe three times we saw Kurtz. Hard to remember exactly. But, yeah, he made, you know, a good first impression in the minor leagues, as you would expect an advanced collegiate bat to do. In 12 games, three doubles, four home runs, more walks than strikeouts. I mean, 368, 520, 763 slash line. Then out in the AFL, 353, 450, 608, seven extra base hits, two home runs in 13 games for Mesa. I mean, Chris, I think you can make a case that Kurtz is, like, if you were ranking on floor, or, I think he could be like a top 10 prospect right now, just given the approach he shows at the plate. Obviously, the eye is phenomenal. More walks than strikeouts by a mile in college, 189 to 130 there. The power, I mean, that's why he's one of the top bats in FYPD this year, you know, a top five pick for most people, and a guy that you probably see in, well, I almost said Oakland again, in Sacramento, West Sacramento, wherever the heck it is, maybe later on this year. He's being drafted in some, you know, DCs this year over at NFBC late, because probably he's up some point second half of the year, given how advanced he is. And I think you're looking at a, you know, top 10 overall first baseman long term, and some guy that, you know, continues to rise up rankings and has one of the best blends of ceiling and floor.
Yeah, I mean, Kurtz is probably one of my favorite prospects from this past year's draft. When you look at him, doesn't scream athlete, but he's a great athlete. He tests extremely well in a lot of athletic testing, which is awesome for a 6'5", 235 first baseman. I mean, the on-base skills are off the charts. He is almost too good at walking. You don't want to see a guy walk that much. But,
right.
I mean, he had a 5'10 career OBP at Wake Forest, which is phenomenal. You love to see that. Way more walks than strikeouts for his entire career over 3 years. Like, so it's not a one-year sample where it's like, okay, Nick Kurtz was just walking a lot this year. No, it's literally every year. And there's a lot of pressure on the bat at first base, obviously. But this guy's going to hit, and he's going to hit for power. I mean, last year put up a 94-mile-an-hour average exit velocity, which was 98th percentile among all college hitters, and his 111-mile-an-hour ninth percentile was 100th percentile. So at the very top of all college hitters from a power perspective, the power is there. The contact marks are extremely good, 80% overall, 87% end zone, sub 14% chase rate. Like, he was one of the lowest chase rates in the draft with Travis Bezzana, J.J. Weatherholt. Is he too passive? Maybe. Like, he walked at a 30% rate in college last year, but he checks all the boxes you want to see. There's power to all fields. One of the games we were at in the AFL had a big opposite field home run halfway up the berm in Sloan Park. It's just all around what you want to see. Is he going to steal bases? No, but very few first basemen will. I think it's just such a safe profile. Kurtz was incredible in his debut last year. The biggest flaw in the profile has been his injury profile, honestly. Like, he struggled with injuries throughout his career. But at the end of the day, really, really good bat, really, really good athlete. He's a special kind of player, in my opinion.
Yeah, and then you add in the fact that he's going to be hitting in a more hitter-friendly home ballpark than he would have been. You know, in Oakland, obviously, just a little cheery on top of the Sunday there. But yeah, like, I think he's going to be a very good in three categories. I think, you know, runs and RBI and home runs will be the three he stands out in. I think the average will be solid, and then OBP is going to be an absolute asset there. So OBP formats, man, maybe peak is look like a top five first baseman in OBP formats. I think that's definitely, you know, a realistic outcome there for Nick Kurtz. So definitely ceiling and floor, much better blend than this next guy who has, you know, big ceiling but questionable floor with Jack Caglione. Definitely more holes in the swing. Obviously, the power is absolutely massive, and you could, you know, make a case that he has some of the best power in the minor leagues. I mean, look at, I think Chris Welsh at Is It the Welsh on Twitter caught both of these videos, game he was at. So obviously, he lives right out there, gets to a lot of AFL games and just other Arizona games throughout the season. Caught both of the massive home runs that Cags hit in one game, where I think combined were nearly 900 feet. It was absolutely two monstrous blasts there. So go, you know, probably search his handle plus the name, and you'll probably find those videos. He had 5 home runs total out in the AFL in 21 games. 236, 300, 449 slash line. This after, you know, unimpressive debut. I mean, I'm not putting really any stock into it, but 241, 302, 388 in 29 games with high A quad cities. But Chris, obviously, you know, full season, this could be a 40 homer bat, but where do you think the average, you know, winds up with Jack, with given some of the contact questions and strikeout, you know, concerns that some people have with him?
Yeah, he's a weird profile because he actually makes an insane amount of contact, but he chases so much. Like, it's power for days. It's some of the best power in the draft class last year. I mean, 33 homers in 2023, 35 in 2024. All the underlying metrics improved this year, too, which was encouraging to see. You know, the overall contact rate, 80%, like, that's really good for SEC ball. He was 91% end zone contact. Love to see that. Biggest knocks is chase rate, and it's been consistent year over year. In college, stepped into pro ball, it was consistent. He was 38% this year. It was around 40% in his pro debut. He was at 40% in the first half of the AFL. Now, it's interesting because it trended downward in the second half of the AFL. He was sub 28% in the second half. It's a three-week sample, so not a lot to take from that. But is it some change that he made that's going to carry over? And, you know, that's something that we'll have to see in 2025. But we know that when Cags connects, he does damage. I will say my concern is with his swing path, that he got pitched down a lot. And when he was pitched down, he hit a lot of balls into the ground. He rolled over a lot of balls. I saw him getting pitched down a ton, and that's kind of what hurt him. Obviously, when he got hangers, and the pitching's bad in the AFL, when he got balls to hit, he hit them a mile because that's the kind of power that he has. It's off the charts power. He hit a ball 122 miles an hour last year with a metal bat, which, I mean, no shock. And I think the AFL one was, what, 118, 117 with Woods? So it's just insane power. So you dream on that 40 home run upside. The contact rates are good enough for him to hit 275. But does he chase his way out of that and hit 250, 240? Maybe. But I think that that's something we'll see more next year. Like, were his plate improvements real in the final 3 weeks of the AFL? And I think that's too small of a sample to form any opinion, but it is something worth monitoring with Jack Caglione.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe I said contact when I was leading into Chris. I meant to say chase. My apologies there. But yeah, if he can get it all together and get that approach better, I mean, the upside is probably even higher than Kurtz. I mean, or at least comparable. I mean, I think he's got a little more raw power than Kurtz, but obviously much safer profile over there with Kurtz as opposed to Cags. But so in general, Chris, would you look? I mean, obviously it depends on the price tag, but would you be looking to invest in Cags right now, or kind of more of a wait and see approach?
I think it's a wait and see. But if you wait and see, then you're going to miss the boat. I mean, if he comes out hot next year, like, he's going to be talked about as a top 10 prospect or higher, just given the pedigree and given the name value that he has. So I think if you want him, you got to get him in the FYPD. Maybe your hope is that he struggles, then you buy low. But it's kind of risky, I think, either way, because if it does come out hot, man, he's going to be the hottest name on the market.
Yeah, he's definitely the buzzier name, you know, when compared to Nick Kurtz. But yeah, he's definitely an intriguing bat for a variety of reasons. Next name here, Xavier Isaac, who had a bit of a fall down rankings second half of the season. I have him 4th here. Chris has him 5th. I mean, him and Jack and my 6th ranked prospect here, Augustin Ramirez, are all pretty even for me. It's a little tier there before dropping down to the Briseño Locklear range. But Isaac was on fire to start the year and then really finished the year poorly. I mean, May hit 337, 420, 674. June was 327, 426, 558. And then the strikeout rate really started trending up. He had 24 strikeouts in 14 games in July, 41 in 22 games in August, and 24 in 14 games in September. So that's 89 strikeouts over his final 50 games. I'm doing the quick math here on what the strikeout rate is going to be. You know, we're looking at like I think 35 or so percent over the second half of the season. Average kind of ticked down as well, wasn't stealing bags. It's had a really rough overall second half of the season. Chris, you know, how much stock are you putting in to what we saw from Xavier Isaac over the second half of the year? Because he's obviously shown plenty of upside as well, but now you have to kind of question, you know, where does the average lie long term? You know, how much, you know, where's the strikeout rate lies? The contact rates were not that good this year. They actually were very worrisome. So a lot of good, a lot of bad here. What are you doing right now to weigh both of those?
I'm out on Xavier Isaac personally. Seen him a lot. The power's fun. I've got videos up on our YouTube of the Dynasty I got of him hitting 113-mile-an-hour nukes, but the contact is just not there. There's positives and negatives to Isaac's profile. He's totally transformed his body. He's a really good athlete for his size. He moves well. But and I also think you can look at the stats and you say, okay, well, it's kind of coincides when he was injured. Right? He had the wrist injury. It definitely went south after the wrist injury. But the contact rates were terrible before. Like, he was getting away with bad contact rates because he was, when he made contact, he was hitting the ball an absolute mile. And so you look at this profile and it's like, okay, I'm kind of confused. If he was playing hurt in the second half, then you should give him a pass. Well, here's my problem. If he was actually playing hurt, he's still hitting balls 115 miles an hour in the second half. I struggle to really believe that if your wrist is really jacked up, you got to have special kind of strength to still hit a ball 115 miles an hour.
Right.
Now, sub 70% end zone contact is not going to play. Like, that's bad. He was right around 60%, slightly under 60% overall contact. Strikeout rate in double A was 40%. It went up again in the AFL. He was striking out at like a 45%+ clip in the Arizona Fall League against bad pitching. So the timing's off, and the contact's always been a bit of a concern. He struggled to make contact even in 2023, and then he came in this year, and while he was on fire to start the year, the contact rates still weren't good, and it caught up to him. Now, I do think injuries kind of played a part in this season, but I can't look past the fact that he's still hitting balls 115 miles an hour in the second half. So if you can do that, like, why are you not making consistent contact if it was injury related? It's a mixed bag here. They were playing him in the outfield in the AFL. He looked completely lost. It was weird to watch. Like, it was awful to watch him in right field, to be honest with you. Is he athletic enough? Maybe. But I don't see that working out. And if he's not making enough contact, then, you know, is he moving into like a Matt Wallner type range? Like, where Wallner, when he connects, yeah, he's a blast. And, you know, Wallner has pretty good OBPs, just given that, you know, he can take a walk. Isaac's low chase, you know, takes his walks. But if you're striking out that much, like, it's really hard to make the profile work. So that's my concern. I'm pretty out on him. You know, he was insanely high last year. Even early in the year, I mean, he was being pushed in top 10s. Like, I've never been that high on him. I've got him 75-80 range right now. And that's kind of like, I don't even feel great about that, just given the amount of contact he makes. So it'll be interesting to kind of follow what happens in 2025. But I'm very scared with this profile, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was just going to say something like that, where the first, you know, couple of months of next season are going to be very telling. Can he turn this around, or is it more of the same? If it's more of the same, I think I still have him a bit higher than you do in my overall, but I share the exact same concerns, and yeah, I'll really drop them more drastically if we see a lot of the similar issues in 2025. Last name in this section we want to dive into, Josue Briseño from the Detroit Tigers, kind of a former catcher slash first base hybrid now. Pretty sure he's going to be first base only. That's where he was getting played out in the Arizona Fall League after splitting time between the two spots in the minor leagues. And, you know, he was limited to only 40 games in the minor leagues this season. You know, hit 278 with a 381 OBP, nearly as many walks as strikeouts, But the power just wasn't there. Only 9 extra base hits and a .378 slug. Only 2 home runs in 40 games for low A Lakeland. Then he had a ridiculous 10 home runs in 25 games out in the AFL. .433, .509, .867 slash line. You know, maybe the best single season we've ever seen out in the Arizona Fall League. Drove in 27 runs, had nearly as many walks and strikeouts there as well. And even though the power wasn't there on the surface for Briseño, at Lakeland this year, the metrics were still pretty solid. I mean, he had a 42% hard hit rate and the 82% contact rate. And he's a big boy. You know, we're kind of speculating on how tall he is because he's listed at 6'4". Might even be a touch taller than that,
yeah.
But that was just speculation on our part from what we were seeing with our eyes out in Arizona. But big, strong, you know, solid contact, solid approach, hits the ball hard. I'm starting to question why I have him behind Isaac at this point. I'm probably going to flip that around, but definitely prospect on the rise right now given the huge AFL he had, and I think that rise is going to continue, another big step forward, and could be a top 25 prospect by midseason next year.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's definitely people that are hesitant on Josue Briseño, and understandably so, just given the track record. That's normally what I've seen cited, why people are a little bit lower on him, but I just can't ignore the underlying data on Briseño, and this dates back to spring training, and I saw him in spring training. He looked good. He looked even better in the AFL. I know Beck saw him in spring breakout game, and he literally, I got his article that said he would break out this year, and he was doing that. Like, he hit 2 home runs in the Florida State League in 176 plate appearances, but I'm just looking past that and looking at the data, and he had a 104.5 ninth percentile EV. Like, that's a great mark for somebody that was 19 years old. That number in the AFL jumped to 107. Like, and he had a pretty sizable amount of batted balls there. He hit a ball 109.5 in the Florida State League. 110.5 was his max in the AFL. The launch angles were consistently good. He makes really good contact. As you mentioned, the contact rates was 82% overall, 89% end zone. He doesn't chase. Like, it's a really solid profile. And I think the only thing that people really have against him right now is just the lack of track record. Hasn't performed. And he did, like, he has performed, but it's just not a big sample. I mean, he had the DSL in 2022, and it was fine. Like, nothing to write home about. Came to the complex in 2023 and was really good. And then in the Florida State League last year, again, it was a really good season. I know his ISO was below 100, but that ain't the kind of profile he is. So he's going to go to high A. He's probably going to struggle out of the gate because April in the Midwest League, that's not a place you want to be.
Nope.
It's going to be 40 degrees every game, windy, cold. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if he struggles out of the gate. It's going to create a really good buying opportunity for me, at least. I'm going to be buying in because I've seen enough of this profile now between spring training and now in the AFL where I'm comfortable with it. I think his bat is legit.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I think it's good that he's going to experience this kind of Midwest. Obviously, Detroit.
Yeah.
I like that, you know, minor league or major league teams have at least one affiliate, you know, close to them. So, you know, especially players like Briseño, who's from Venezuela, who, you know, that's never dealt with that, you know, northern cold type of weather. I can really get at least a little taste for it and learn how to acclimate himself to it. So, but yeah, definitely player on the rise, 100% buying in. I mean, we saw him probably, what, 4 games or whatever out in the AFL, and he was absolutely, even his outs were loud, and he was hitting the ball hard all over the field. All right, move on to our 11 through 25 rankings. But to recap the top 10, Chris had Bisayo, Eldridge, Kurtz, Caglione, Isaac, Augustin Ramirez, Briseño, Ralphie Velasquez, Ryan Clifford, Luke Adams. I had Bisayo, Eldridge, Kurtz, Isaac, Caglione, Ramirez, Briseño, Locklear, De Los Santos, and Tyler Black. 11 through 25 for me. 11 through 15 is Trey Morgan, Rafi Velasquez, Zach DiCenzo, Luke Adams, CJ Kafis. 16 through 20, the new Michael Bush of the minor leagues, Justin Foscue, Andres Chaparro, Ryan Clifford, Ivan Melendez, and Jonathan Long. 21 through 25, Abimelech Ortiz, Mike Bove, Romeo Sanabria, Pablo Guerrero, and Jared Thomas. Chris, who you got 11 through 25?
All right, I've got Tyler Locklear at 11, Trey Morgan at 12, Zach DiZinzo 13, CJ Cephas 14, Davison De Los Santos 15, and then I've got 16 through 20, Luis Marejo Jr., Pablo Guerrero, Tyler Black, Jonathan Long, and Alan Roden. And then rounding out the 21 through 25, Will Simpson, recently traded to Tampa, Cole Mathis, Blake Burke, Ethan Anderson. Those are all new draftees. And then I've got Climber Lemos, the Rangers, rounding out the 25th spot.
All right. So let's start with Davison De Los Santos, a guy that I had in the top 10. You did not. I mean, not surprising. It's, you know, just in general, probably one of the prospects that has the widest, you know, rank. If you look at, like, the, you know, think of the ADP Minimax, his prospect ranking Minimax is probably one of the bigger ranges you'll see out there, at least for a, you know, top guy that's considered top 100 by some. I mean, and it's easy to, really, it's easy to see both sides of the spectrum because there's, you know, the pros and cons of Davison De Los Santos are very profound. You look at, you know, he led the minor leagues with 40 home runs, drove in 120 last year. This was in 137 games between Arizona and Miami, 38 of those in Double A for Arizona, and then 99 total in Triple A between Jacksonville and Reno, and surface slash line 294, 343, 571. And on the surface, one of the best minor league seasons in 2024. But first off, you got to factor in where he played. Amarillo, very hitter-friendly. I think the most hitter-friendly in Double-A, or if not the most, one of the top two or three in all of Double-A. And then Reno, before he got traded, Reno is basically like hitting on the moon pretty much. So two extremely hitter-friendly environments. I'm not saying that's the only reason why he hit well, because there obviously is some upside here, but definitely got to take that into consideration. Then he went to Jacksonville, more of a neutral park there in the International League with Miami, and still hit, you know, 12 home runs in 50 games there, but slash line down to 240, 284, 459. Overall contact rates were, you know, 63, 64, 65% in that range between AA and AAA. Very aggressive, doesn't walk much, can strike out a bit. So looks like maybe a high power, low average, low OBP type. So it's kind of a, one of those, how much stock do you put in that type of profile? Chris, I know you have much lower than me. You know, are you just pretty much out on De Los Santos at this point?
I'm just not buying at the cost. I think that his value is skyrocketed, and I'm just not comfortable with it. Just, it's probably one of the most interesting profiles in the minors. I'll say that. I mean, it's one, for me, one of the hardest players to evaluate. And just looking at the performance versus like the eye test and data just tells two different stories. Now, there's no question he's going to hit for power. I mean, it was quite a journey for him as well last year. He goes from the D-backs to being selected in the Rule 5 last December, spending all spring with the Guardians before being returned right before the regular season. He's in Arizona, traded to Miami at the deadline. It was quite a journey for him. You know, I'm impressed that he put up this stat line that he did all year despite the contact rates. They were bad, as you mentioned. I mean, 62% in AA, 65% in AAA, 77% in zone. So that's much better than Isaac's. So at least he's got that going for him. But he's the polar opposite as far as plate discipline to Xavier Isaac. He chased one of the worst chase rates in the minors at 45%. Super aggressive profile, swings at everything, connects, does damage. It's exactly what he does. He had a 109 mile an hour ninth percentile. He can hit the ball to the moon. I mean, a 116 max, like off the charts power. Now, there's 35 plus home runs in this bat, no doubt about it. Can he hit enough? We'll see. The contact rates are concerning. The chase rate is very concerning because it's rare that we see a prospect just drastically improve that number. This is kind of who he's been his entire career. I think that he's going to run a lot of streaks. I think he's going to have some really good years. Don't get me wrong. Don't let the rank say, oh, Chris hates Davison De Los Santos. I think he's going to have some good years. I look and I see a Franmil Reyes type profile, and Franmil had a 30 home run season, but Franmil Reyes didn't last in the league. Not saying that's going to be the case here, but I think that that's kind of the risky profile you're looking at.
With him, I feel like if Pedro Serrano had a baseball savant page from the Major League movies, it would look a lot like Davison De Los Santos's. I mean, Kit can hit the ball an absolute mile, but, you know, the hitting the ball at absolute mile part happens, you know, few and far between in terms of making contact and this swinging outside the zone. So, yeah, he's a tough one. I mean, does he hit more than 220, 230? Is he kind of like a Joey Gallo-esque profile? I mean, those profiles don't really work too much anymore, at least for fantasy purposes. So, I mean, I'm not out on him. I mean, he could come in and hit 30 home runs this year, and it wouldn't surprise me in the major leagues. And he's got to get a chance now, especially with Jake Berger out of town, following that kind of odd trade for Miami. So another opening there for him. So I bet you he gets 500-plus plate appearances. But, you know, I don't know. The average might be floating around the Mendoza line or something like that. And OBP well below 300. So, yeah, kind of a weird profile. But this next guy, look at the profile on the opposite end of the spectrum. That's Trey Morgan of the Tampa Bay Rays. Another first baseman that they were using out in the outfield, but he looked a lot better out there. I mean, Morgan's a really good defender. I think that kind of goes under, you know, kind of flies under the radar a bit. Very good defender, sneaky athlete, not like a burner by any means, but just, you know, good athlete that can read the ball well. And he made a couple good plays out there, a couple diving stops, almost came up with another one that hit off his glove, if I recall correctly. And again, at the plate, very different profile from De Los Santos's. Trey Morgan had exactly as many walks as strikeouts this past year, 48 of each in 100 games between low A, high A, and double A, .324, .408, .483, added in 23 doubles, 10 home runs, and 20 steals, though 19 of those were in low A and high A, only one steal in 21 games in double A. Again, not a burner, so I don't expect, you know, like a ton of speed there, but he's probably going to give you double digits and, you know, 10, 12, something like that. Maybe a little more. Maybe he gets in the mid-teens. Power, probably similar range. I mean, he's below average power, but makes so much contact that he's going to be an asset in the batting average and OBP departments. I mean, could he hit over 300? Sure. I think that's definitely a possible outcome. Could he be one of the top players in baseball in OBP? Yeah, I think that's another possibility there. I mean, he's kind of, you know, maybe not quite Luis Arraez in terms of contact, but take a little bit of average away and add a little bit of power and speed. So overall, value-wise, you know, given all that lumped together, could be similar to Luis Arraez, where he's a, you know, top 150 to 200 player or something like that. It's kind of a weird profile, not one that is overly sexy, but I think Trey Morgan's going to be a decent player for a long time, given that he's such a high floor.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a unique player. He's got one of the best approaches in the game. You read the stats. He's about as unique as it gets with two strikes. It's a lot of fun to watch, where he's taking a stride every other pitch. When he gets to two strikes, I mean, his stance is legit as wide as the batter's box. And he chokes up like halfway up the bat, it seems. Not really, but he does choke up a ton. And he's just going to put the bat on ball and put it in play no matter the outcome. He's not going to strike out. Very hard hitter to strike out. You know, Morgan, yeah, he hit some home runs this year. It's interesting profile. He's not going to hit for a ton of power, just given the exit velocity profile. It's not a frame that's going to fill out much more. I mean, he's already well filled out. But he did put up some good EVs in the AFL. He had a new max EV at 111, which was awesome to see. He hit a ball 110, I think, in the regular season. And he hit one 440, if I'm not mistaken, which is big boy power. But also a lot of his home runs were kind of cheap shots. I sat on a couple of them where just like he had a pop-up in Asheville. It's 290 and right. And even he thought it was a fly out. It just kind of blooped over the wall where it's 290. And it was just funny to watch his reaction because he thought it was an easy fly out. But, you know, he's a fantastic player. The glove is spectacular. He would be the best fielding first baseman in the league, like right now. You put him in the outfield, he can play. Like, he moves, he's athletic. Trey Morgan does a lot that you want to see. I've seen high character marks from him too. A lot of just hard work, like good teammate, a fan favorite. I like Trey Morgan a lot. And so while the ranks of him aren't going to be like off the charts high or anything, I mean, you look at our ranks, Eric had him 11, I had him 12. I think it's just kind of one of those profiles where he's going to be really good, just consistently good, but not super flashy.
Man, and what a head of hair too on that guy. That team had a lot of good hair on the AFL, if I recall correctly. But it's only 290 in Asheville in right field.
And it's a tall fence, but it's still, I mean, it's not hard to hit a fly ball 290.
That makes Yankee Stadium look like a polo ground or something. Yeah. 290. I mean, I could get some out with two. Well, I don't know. I've never actually been on in the ballpark, taking full on batting practice in several years. So who knows? All right, we got our breakout picks here as we end every show with these. And these were, I think, a little bit tougher because, as we mentioned, the back half of these rankings can get, you know, a little not disinteresting, but not as sexy as some other back half of the top 25s we'll talk about for prospect rankings. But, Chris, who did you end up landing on for your first base breakout pick?
Yeah, I'm going to go kind of off the cusp and not a profile that, like, comes without risk, but it's Pablo Guerrero, who had a kind of odd start to his career where in the DSL in 2023, it was not great, but he was 16 years old. He's always been kind of young for each level. I think he may have turned 17 at the very end of that DSL season in 2023, birthday on July 31st. So always been young. And this year he was at the complex. He dominated. He went to single A, and he held his own. Like, while the numbers aren't going to reflect that if you look at the single A slash line, like, largely he held his own there. He actually made more contact in single A, struck out way less. There were some things that looked good in the profile for me for Pablo Guerrero in single A. I've yet to see him. I will see him early in the year. Let's get to see this. They're now Hickory will be the low A affiliate for the Rangers, and the new Spartanburg affiliate right down the road from me will be high A for the Rangers. So I'll get some Guerrero looks early in the year. And yeah, I just look at what he did last year, and it's like, okay, like, I think this guy certainly has all the talent in the world to put up huge power numbers. I mean, you know, this is where I'm like, okay, everybody loves Lazaro Montes, but like, I mean, this guy, Pablo Guerrero, 2.5 years younger than Lazaro Montes, he was already putting up better exit velocities, better hard hit rates. I mean, his ninth percentile was over a mile an hour higher than Lazaro Montes, which is kind of fascinating to me because everybody, and obviously Lazaro Montes has big power, don't get me wrong on that, but the barrel rate, I mean, hard hit rate, like, all these numbers were better for Pablo Guerrero. Again, it was complex and some single A. Different levels, that obviously matters. But again, Lazaro was in single A for a decent portion of the year. The contact is the question with Pablo Guerrero. It was some struggles overall. It was, I think, 67% overall contact, but his end zone made up for it. It was above 80% end zone contact. That'll play. For reference, Lazaro was sub 75% end zone contact. So it's just interesting for me to, like, think about these profiles of these big power hitters. Pablo Guerrero is going to be really interesting. He did play some outfield too, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he split time between outfield and first base. Where does he play long term? It's probably first base, just given the body and how he moves. But this is a real power bat that I think could be someone that flies up rankings. He's not really all that hype, but I think he potentially could get there. It's an easy breakout pick for me.
Yeah, no, that's a great pick. One I was looking at as well. I have him in my top 25, and definitely believe that number will be, well, the ranking will be higher, number will be lower, whatever you want to say. His ranking will be better in 2025 than now in December of 2024. My guy is going to be Jonathan Long of the Chicago Cubs, one that I was definitely too low on. That's why I love going out to the AFL, because, you know, in general, you don't like making too many, you know, sizable, you know, rankings or evaluation shifts. But sometimes you're like, you see a guy, you're like, oh, hey, I was too low on him. So you adjust to correct what the ranking should be. And I was definitely too low on Jonathan Long. I had a pretty solid year this year between high A and double A. Really turned it on double A. High A was, it was okay. But it was, kind of what Chris is talking about, that in the Midwest League early in the season. So he turned it on in double A, 46 games there, 200 plate appearances, 340, 455, 528. More walks than strikeouts, 35-33, 9 doubles and 7 home runs. He's not going to be a player that adds any steals outside of, you know, maybe he gets one or two a season. That's just not his game. But he can play both corners, you know, play a little bit of corner outfield as well. So where he winds up, still kind of a question mark there. You know, the Cubs have a lot of moving pieces. They already just traded Paredes, but they have Matt Shaw. Do they trade Bellinger? So kind of hard to speculate on where Long winds up, or maybe he gets dealt to. But, you know, he's above average power and, you know, solid contact rates as well. Right around 75-76% this year. You know, walk rate was around 14%, strikeout rate just over 20%. So does a lot of things well. You know, not the flashiest guy, not the buzziest name, but a really solid profile at the plate. Again, not going to provide any speed, but I think he can be a solid four-category contributor from, you know, I'm going to guess probably more so one of the corner infield spots as opposed to outfield, but just a solid performer that I think is underrated and I think will continue to, you know, break out and raise his ranking again next year. But that is going to wrap us up for First Base Prospects. We'll be back with you all later in the week for our First Base Dynasty rankings. But until then, everyone take care.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.